Luke chapter 5, we're at verse 27, picking up where we left off last week. And this is what it says. It says, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi sitting at his tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said to him. And Levi got up and left everything and followed him. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others were eating with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law who belonged to their sect complained to his disciples, "Why do you eat and drink with tax collectors and sinners?" And Jesus answered them, "It's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I have not come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance." So Lord, before we dig into your word again this morning, I pray that you would open our hearts and our minds to see what it is you're teaching us, Jesus, about following you and joining you on your mission in this world. In your name we pray, amen. Levi was an odd choice for a disciple. He was a tax collector. And I know a lot of you have been around church for a while, but I also know that it's Mother's Day, and that means that some of you are here because your mom dragged you out, or you're watching because your mom said, "Hey, it's Mother's Day. Here's what I want for Mother's Day. I want you to come to church." Not everybody maybe knows what's the big deal about Levi being a tax collector, other than our own innate trouble with tax collectors even today. But if you have trouble with tax collectors today, it's nothing compared to how they felt about tax collectors then. Tax collectors, essentially, here's the way it was set up. Rome had conquered and occupied Israel. So they were controlling and dominating Israel. And one of the things they did is they collected taxes. So all of a sudden, imagine another country taking us over and collecting taxes on top of the taxes you already pay, right? So Rome had done this, and what they did is they contracted Jewish people. Jewish people would contract with the Romans to be the tax collectors. And so what they would do is they pay a certain amount to the Roman government to collect taxes in a certain town or a certain area. And the Roman government would say, "Fine, you now have the license and our approval and our authority behind you to collect taxes in that town." And then the tax collector could go back, and as long as he collected and sent the payment off to Rome that they wanted, he could then collect whatever he wanted above and beyond that, under the guise of, "Oh, this is what the Romans want." And tax collectors got rich off of doing that. They made themselves wealthy off of doing that. And so they were traitors to their own people. They were greedy traitors to their own people who were lining their pockets on the trouble that their own nation was having. Not only that, but tax collectors, you can probably guess, didn't have a lot of friends. So the only friends they had were each other. And they were friends with all like Roman government people and officials, people who weren't following God or obeying God. And so they were tainted religiously and spiritually. And they were considered by those who were trying to be faithful to God to be unholy. And so tax collectors weren't just greedy traitors, they were ungodly greedy traitors. That's how everyone would have seen them. Like I said, Levi was a weird choice for Jesus to make when he's looking for people to be his disciples, to be part of his team. But when Jesus saw Levi and said, "Levi, follow me," that's all he says. Levi gets up, leaves behind everything. He's in his booth where he would collect his taxes, and he leaves it all behind, leaves all the money behind, and just starts to follow Jesus, which is crazy to think about. But then the next thing he does is he throws a giant party and invites all of his friends, who are all tax collectors and sinners, people who are just out there doing whatever they want, who don't care about God or God's ways, and doing all kinds of stuff, and that's why the religious community considered them tainted and unrighteous and all that. And the only friends he's got are the community of other tax collectors that no one else wants to be friends with. But he invites all of them to come to his home. So it's this party with all these people who were greedy money chasers, who betrayed their own nation, who were ungodly people, didn't care at all about God, who did all kinds of crazy, nasty stuff. And should you go to a party thrown by someone like that, full of people like that? Jesus did. Jesus went to the party. It was actually a party for Jesus. And that really confused all the religious people there. They called themselves Pharisees, and a lot of you have heard of them because you've been around church, but Pharisees were a group of people who took it really seriously. that they wanted everyone to obey God's laws and follow God's rules so that God would rescue them and get them away from the oppression of Rome and make them a great nation again. And they looked at people like Levi, like these tax collectors, like those are the worst people you could hang out with. It's because of them that God isn't rescuing us. It's because of people like that. They're helping the enemy. They're not just helping the enemy, but their sinfulness, their wickedness, their disobedience to God, that's part of the reason God isn't helping us. We got to get everybody to obey God, and then God will help us. That's how they looked at it. And all the other great teachers in Israel at the time, anybody who was trying to build a group of disciples, they would never call someone like Levi. They would pick scripture, people who studied the scriptures and who were, you know, very righteous and religious. That's who they picked. So when Jesus picks Levi, their brains again explode. They don't understand what he's doing because in their mind, they think Levi is the worst person in the world to pick. And so they're really confused. So they want to know, Jesus, why are you sitting in that house at that party eating with those people? Like, they're the problem, and you're just, like, joining in with them. What are you doing? And Jesus' response to them is, from verse 31, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the sick. I haven't come to call the righteous, but sinners to repentance. In other words, how are they supposed to become healthy and well if I don't get close to them? I hang out with outsiders, people you call outsiders, because my presence among them can help them heal and lead them to health and lead them back into relationship with God. That's what Jesus did. The question for you and me, anybody who wants to follow Jesus and be a Christian, is, well, what should we do? Like, how are we supposed to act? What are we supposed to do when it comes to our relationships with the world, with people who don't follow Jesus? Are we supposed to run away and hide and create our own little institutions? Are we supposed to hide in our churches, create our own little areas where we can feel safe to be a Christian? Are we supposed to try and make our nation act like they're Christians so that we'll feel more comfortable? What are we supposed to do? Or are we supposed to get in close with people who aren't following Jesus, but then aren't we running the risk of compromising? Aren't we running the risk of just becoming like them? How are we supposed to walk this line between being godly and being in this world? What are we supposed to do? And I think this passage, and Levi himself, gives us a really good path through this to help us answer this question. Here's the first thing we learn from what we see in this story here. You can't make a difference from a distance. And just in case it wasn't clear to everybody who is a follower of Jesus, our whole purpose is to make a difference. But you can't make a difference from a distance. One of the things, I don't know about you, but this past year was difficult for a lot of reasons. One of the things that was difficult is if you had to call your doctor for a visit, you ended up doing a video call or maybe a phone call. Some of you went through that. So I was having this pain in my abdomen and called my doctor. We set up a video appointment, and he's like, okay, show me where it is. And like, it's like right around here. And he's like, okay, it could be a hernia. It could be this, could be that. Like, but how do you know? Like, we're on a phone call, right? And she's just got to trust me explaining it to her. She's like, well, go for this test, go for that test. And so I did. It's not a hernia. It was nothing. So finally, we got an in-person appointment. And laid me on the table, and she literally stuck her hands into my abdomen. It's like, okay, there's your liver, there's your small intestine, here's your large intestine, there's your stomach, here's your colon. I'm like, first, how in the world can you feel that through this muscle layer that covers all of that? But, you know, the point is she could now feel, and we could get to the problem because closeness makes it possible to actually make a difference. You can't make a difference from a distance. Jesus, the very nature of what Jesus did, right? What we talk about all the time. Jesus came into this world and became one of us. Tells us that Jesus believed it was essential that he become close to us in the most incredible way you and I could even imagine. Becoming one of us. Flesh and blood, one of us. In order to make an ultimate and final difference. Because up till then, we kept just running back on that wheel and spinning over and over again, doing the same stuff. Jesus stepped in because the only way to make an internal lasting impact and difference was by closing the distance. So Jesus stepped in close to us. And then what did Jesus say about those who follow him? He said, you guys are like a light lit up on a pole. He said, you don't light a light on a pole and then throw a blanket on top of it. That's stupid, right? I didn't light you up. I didn't give you new life to then, so you could run away and hide it somewhere and just preserve the light. Make sure the light stays on. Let's just surround it and keep everybody away from it. Let's hide it somewhere. And then he says, we're like salt. I don't know. I don't put salt on food too much, but sometimes you got to add some salt when you're cooking, right? How do you make the salt work? Do you just put it next to the food? And then, it tastes so much better now that the salt's on the table. No, you got to put it on the food because you can't make a difference from a distance. And that's one of the great temptations for Christians, because we worry so much about, you know, compromising. But the truth is, a lot of times we just want to hide. The truth is, a lot of times we're just scared. We're scared because we're not secure in what we believe. We're not secure in our relationship with God and what he's done in us. And so it's easier to hide than to go out and be among people who may not think the way we think or live the way we live or act the way we do. But Jesus makes it clear, you can't make a difference from a distance. And worst of all, when you and I, claiming to be followers of Jesus, when we keep our distance, what we tell people is that we think we're better than them. That's the message that's sent. That we think that they're going to taint us because we're pure and they're not. And that is a lie. That's not true. They are not worse than us. They are not worse sinners than we are. We're all equally broken in God's eyes. But that's the lie the Pharisees believed. They believed they were more pure than the tax collectors because they did the righteous things. They kept the rules, but in keeping the rules, they lost the mission. And because of that, Jesus called them one of the worst insults you could imagine. He said, you're like whitewashed tombs. Like, you could go and paint a tomb white. It doesn't change the fact that what's inside is death. He said, you're like people who, and some of you have teenagers, moms, maybe you'll be able to relate to this today. You're like people who just wash the outside of the cup but don't wash the inside. And what's the point of that? Because they'd lost the mission. And here we are, the Son of God is standing right in front of them. And who sees it and who doesn't? The religious people who worked so hard to obey all the rules and keep themselves right on the outside, they can't recognize Jesus, but a tax collector does. That should tell us something about the way we act and behave. They thought distance preserved their purity and their superiority, but it actually just proved that they had abandoned God's mission. And when you've abandoned God's mission, then you've lost the whole point of everything. You can't make a difference from a distance. And look, Christians have always struggled with this. This isn't new. Paul writes about this in his letters in the New Testament. In 1 Corinthians, the first letter we have that he wrote to them, he talks about a previous letter he had sent them where he encouraged them, you know, stay away from immoral people. But they got confused. They misunderstood what he meant. So he writes this in 1 Corinthians 5, 9, verse 9 and 10 to just clear it up. He said, look, I wrote to you in my letter not to associate with sexually immoral people, not at all meaning the people of this world who are immoral or greedy and swindlers or idolaters. In that case, you'd have to leave the world. And then he goes on to say, I'm talking about people in the church, people who claim to be followers of Jesus, who live immoral lives, who live like everybody else. So what Paul telling them is, no. I'm not telling you not to be among people who are not following Jesus. You'd have to somehow escape the world. And many Christians throughout generations have tried to escape the world. We still do. But that's not what we're supposed to do. We're not supposed to avoid people who don't follow Jesus. We're supposed to avoid people who say, yeah, I'm following Jesus, but then act no different from anybody else. Because that's the dangerous person. Now, I'm going to guess, though, that some of you, you know, as we talk about this, the one thing that I worry about, and I'm sure you worry about too, is, yeah, but if we start being around and we get close to people who aren't following Jesus, the chances that I might compromise go up. The chances that I might do something that dishonors Jesus goes up. You know, because, you know, I'm probably going to fail at some point, and we worry about that. And then you might think of other things. Paul wrote in his second letter that we have to the Corinthians, he writes, and this verse might ring in some of your ears if you've been around church for a while. He writes, don't be yoked with unbelievers. For what do righteousness and wickedness have in common? Or what does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? And you've probably heard that verse or someone preach a sermon about, yep, so you got to stay away from ungodly people. You've got to stay away from them. Don't let them taint your life. But is that what Jesus modeled for us? And is that what Scripture actually teaches us? The second mistake we can make is a serious one. So the first mistake we can make is thinking that we could make a difference from a distance. We can't. But the second mistake is a very real problem for us. It's this. Don't sacrifice your difference in order to close the distance. See, so many times in order to get close to people, we sacrifice the difference Jesus has made in our lives. And that's a tragic mistake too. It's equally tragic. It's tragic to avoid people, and it's also tragic to just give up the difference Jesus made in your life in order to get close to them. I've watched, just brokenhearted over this last year, several young pastors who, I hear the stories about, who were doing a really good job getting close to people. Like, they got close to certain, like, movie stars or superstars or musicians, and like, oh, look, they're leading them to Jesus, and now that superstar, that celebrity is a Christian now. But in reality, what happened was this young pastor sacrificed the difference of Jesus in their life and became like the celebrities. And so then it begins to come out that now they're chasing after sexual relationships outside of their marriage. They're embezzling money. They're doing all this stuff and getting involved in all this stuff. They're becoming no different than anybody else. So they did a good job closing the gap, but they didn't hang on to the difference Jesus had made in their lives. And look, those stories make the news. I'm not going to start naming people, because the truth is, while those stories make the news, every one of us goes through this every day. Every one of us goes through this struggle every day. This temptation to sacrifice what makes us different, the difference Jesus has made in our lives, in order to fit in with the people we're around. There's a guy I follow on YouTube. He's a photographer. He does amazing landscape photography and videos and things like that. And he'll travel around, and one thing he does is he's got this drone, this flying machine, with cameras attached to it, and he's able to get these shots and these videos from angles and points of view that are just crazy to see. And he'll go around the world to beautiful places, to, you know, beautiful tourist attractions, and get pictures you and I could never get, because he flies the drone up there and he gets these incredible shots. So one time he traveled to a nation that's pretty strict in the Middle East. And when he got to the airport, after spending weeks planning the trip and all kinds of money, you know, to get the airplane ride and get the equipment and get it all over there to get close to these places so he could take really good pictures, he gets to customs in the airport and they confiscate his drone. They tell him, you can't bring this into our country. We'll keep it here. You can pick it up on your way out. And so he's sitting in his hotel room and he's like, the whole purpose I came was to take those shots with my drone, and now I don't have my drone, so now I'm just like another tourist here. I can't make a difference. If you've got to leave Jesus behind, or the good news about Jesus, or the difference he's made in your life, in order to get close to a group of people, then you might get close to them, but once you get there, what good will you be to them? Will you be able to show them the grace and mercy and love of Jesus, the difference he's made in your life? Not if you've left them behind to get there. And this is the struggle we have. This is the difficult part of it, because we each go to work or you go to school and there's groups of people and you want to be included, you want to be involved, but should you really be engaged in the gossiping and the tearing everybody apart the way they are? Because that's certainly not what Jesus is doing in this world. That's not what he's called us to be like. And one of the differences Jesus makes in our lives is he changes the way we talk about one another. And so now, do I want to be close to them but give up Jesus? Or can I bring Jesus into them? What do I do? Or maybe it's lying at work. Or maybe it's different settings where you've got to compromise and you're going to behave in certain ways just to be accepted, because it feels good to be accepted and it doesn't feel good to be rejected. And you need that acceptance, and so you you leave Jesus aside. And then when you get there, maybe you get close, but now you've lost Jesus and you've got nothing to give them that's going to help them. You've got to get close to make a difference. But if you give up your difference in order to get close, you still can't make a difference. We've watched over this past year some like amazing doctors and nurses and healthcare people have worked to take care of people struggling with and dying from COVID. And you'll remember a year ago, the struggle and the scramble to find the personal protective equipment, right? Everyone was scrambling. We got to find more to give to our doctors and our nurses and the frontline workers so that they can do what? So that they can get close to the people who are infected and hurting and care for them without themselves getting infected. Because if they lose the difference that they have health, then now they can be no use to the people who are hurting. So they needed that gear in order to make it possible for them to get close to make a difference. But if they didn't have that, then they get infected. Now what do? They've lost the thing that makes it possible for them to be close and make a difference, their own health. If we leave Jesus behind, then first of all, who's going to keep us from wandering back in the ways of living we used to live that we know were just ways that led us to death and pain and chaos? But we've learned this new way. But if we leave Jesus behind, then who's going to keep us and hold us and guard our hearts when we're close with people who are hurting and who need to hear the love of Christ? So you got to close the difference to make a difference, but you can't sacrifice your difference to close the distance. And you might think, well, you know, how do I figure this out? How do I make this work? You know, I probably have to go to a whole bunch of classes to figure, you know, to learn more, to learn to read the Bible more. Levi did this. How long was Levi a follower of Jesus when he did this? 30 seconds? A minute? Within the first moments of Jesus saying, follow me, Levi gets this right. He understands this idea of proximity with a purpose. Proximity with a purpose. So the moment Jesus calls Levi to follow him, Levi looks around and says, you know what? I can't live this way anymore. I can't live this life of greed and this unethical life of cheating my people the way I've been doing it and hurting them. I can't live this life anymore. I can't pursue money at all costs like that's the thing that's really the big difference in the world. And so he realizes following Jesus means being a different person. It means going from a greedy person to a generous person, an unethical person to a person who cares about doing what's right. A person who only looks out for himself to a person who cares about the people around him. And so some of you might remember a story of another tax collector, a guy named Zacchaeus, short little guy, who when he met Jesus and Jesus came, actually Jesus invited himself into Zacchaeus' house and they sat there and they talked. And at the end of that, Zacchaeus said, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to pay back everybody I've cheated, which is pretty much everybody. And not just pay him back, I'm going to pay him back four times what I cheated them out of. Think about that. And not just that, he said, I'm going to give half of everything I own to the poor. That's the difference Jesus made in his life, completely transforming him from this greedy, money-chasing, selfish person to incredibly generous, not worrying about his own future and concerns. He only cared about this mission that Jesus was calling him to. So Levi here, he looks around, I can't do this life anymore. He tells his tax collecting friends, he says, I can't partner with you guys in doing this anymore. I can't partner with you. And that's what Paul's talking about in 2 Corinthians 6. When he says, don't be unequally yoked. He's talking about, look, Jesus has called, if you're a follower of Jesus, he's called you to a mission. And that mission is to fight back the chaos and the injustice and the abuse and the exploitation and the manipulation and just the sin and the brokenness of this world, and instead to sow beauty and order into this world. That's the mission he's called us on, to let people know God will rescue them from this life that's broken and give them new life. And so you can't join him in that and at the same time go do things that are contributing to the chaos Jesus is trying to drive out. The bitterness and the anger Jesus is trying to drive out. The uncontrolled addiction to name something, you can be addicted to it. We always pick the top things, the drug, the alcohol, the sex, but the food, other people's approval, money, wealth, esteem. We get addicted to all kinds of stuff because it's like, this is what I need. And Jesus is saying, look, I'm calling you to be free from that. Follow me, find real life. But that means joining him on this mission to bring that to this world. You can't yoke yourself to Jesus, tie yourself to Jesus in that mission, and be tied to someone who's going the opposite direction. It just doesn't work. So Levi immediately breaks his partnership with all the other tax collectors and says, I cannot do this with you anymore. I'm partnered with Jesus now. But then the very next breath, after telling him, I can't do this with you anymore, he says, but come to my house. Come to my house. We're going to have a party. We're going to have a giant banquet meal. And we're gonna honor this guy I just met, Jesus. And I want you to meet him. So he throws a party and invites them into his house to come be with him. Levi, then, what he does here, in the first minute of being a follower, he refuses to sacrifice the difference Jesus made in his life, even though it could cost him the only friends he has, because the only friends he has are the other tax collectors. No one else would be his friend. But even so, he says, I'm not going to sacrifice and compromise the difference Jesus made. But then he calls them in and gets even closer to them than he'd probably ever been before. He's like, no, come sit in my home. We're not just going to work together. Come sit in my home and eat with me. I'm going to feed you. And we're going to talk, and I want you to meet Jesus and see this difference that he has made in my life and the difference he can make in your life. You've got to get close in order to make a difference. You can't make a difference from a distance, but you also can't sacrifice the difference Jesus has made in you in order to get close, to close that distance. And it's a really difficult balance to strike, but we see Levi do it here. And if you and I would take some time this week to think about, look at how he did that. Look at how, on the one hand, he breaks that partnership, but on the other, he affirms that relationship and stays close to them without compromising the difference Jesus made in his life. That's what Levi does. And he did it all within the first few minutes. The first few minutes of being a follower of Jesus. So you don't need years of training to do it. You can learn to do it just by looking at Jesus, looking at Levi, and at the example of all the true followers who followed Jesus throughout time. We close the difference in order to make a difference by showing the difference that Jesus has made in our lives. That's how we're called to live. Close the distance so that you can make a difference by showing people the difference Jesus has made in our lives. You know, I found this letter I was reading the other day. It's a 2,000-year-old letter. It's from the second century, about 100 years after Jesus died and rose again. It's a letter from a guy named Athenagoras, who sounds like he should be a math teacher, I know, but he's not. Athenagoras wrote it to his friend Diognetus. And in one section of the letter, he begins to describe Christians, because he'd met a bunch of Christians in his travels. And so he begins to describe what Christians from 2,000 years ago were like. And I want to read this for you. I want you to hear what he thought of Christians from 2,000 years ago. Listen to what he says. He says, the difference between Christians and the rest of mankind is not a matter of nationality or language or customs. Christians do not live in separate cities of their own. They don't speak a special dialect or practice eccentric ways of life. They pass their lives in whatever town each one's lot has determined for them to live in. They conform to ordinary local usage in the clothes they wear and the food they eat and their other habits. But nevertheless, the organization of their community exhibits some features that are just remarkable and surprising. For instance, even though their residents at home in their own countries, he says their behavior there is more like they're just passing through. Though destiny has placed them here in the flesh, they don't live for just their appetites of the flesh. Their days are passed on earth, but their citizenship, it's like they belong to a different place, to heaven. They obey all the prescribed laws, but in their own private lives, they transcend the laws. They show love to all men, and all men persecute them. They're misunderstood and condemned, yet by suffering death, they're quickened into life. They are poor, yet making many rich, lacking all things, yet having all things in abundance. They repay curses with blessings and abuse with courtesy. For the good they do, they suffer stripes as evildoers. Worship team, would you just come back while we talk about this letter for a second? If someone were to write a letter about Christians today, what would they write? What would they write? And I know it probably depends on where they're at and which Christians they've met. So let's maybe narrow it down. If the only Christians they knew were the people in this church, and they were to write a letter to someone explaining, oh, this is what Christians are like, what would they write? What would they say? Would they notice a difference? Would they notice our efforts to get close and care for them? Let's dive a little deeper even. If you were the only Christian someone knew, and that person wrote a letter about what Christians were like, what would they write? Would they write, this person does their best to avoid other people who don't think the way they do? It seems like they're afraid of someone challenging them or afraid of getting tainted by people who aren't as holy as they are. Is that what they would write? Would they write, oh, this person's no different than the rest of us. They do the same thing. His relationship's the same. He does all the same stuff. But I don't know, not much difference. Just go to church every once in a while. Or would they write that whenever I'm around that person, I experience, it's like just blessing pours off of them. It's like I'm experiencing life and this deep peace and love, and it just makes me hungry for whatever it is they have. What would they write if you were the only Christian they knew? How would they describe Christianity? You know, it's never going to be that you or I are perfect, because you and I are far from it. But do they, when we invite them into our lives and when we step into our lives, do they see Jesus through us? Because Jesus has called us on a mission. And that mission is about getting close to people with a purpose. Not getting close to them because I need their affirmation or it makes me feel better and more comfortable in life, but proximity with a purpose. Getting close to people so that I can share this incredible new life Jesus has given me. So why would I avoid other people who don't think the way I do? Of course I want to be near them. I want them to see. I want them to see the difference Jesus has made in me. And some of you may be sitting here saying, I don't know if they'll see much difference. So this morning I invite you to just hear what Jesus says to you. He's calling you to let him make a difference in your life. Let him transform you. Don't walk away like, oh, I'm the worst Christian ever. No one should be around me. I'm going to go hide in my house. I'm never putting a Jesus bumper sticker on my car because people are going to see the way I drive. They're going to see me flipping them the bird, and they're going to, oh, Christians are all the same. You may feel that way about yourself, and you may not be wrong. But that diagnosis of your present condition is not the determination of your future. What Jesus can do in you, what he did in Levi, what he's doing in each one of us is transform us, and that's what he wants to do. So that we can radiate his grace and his forgiveness so that people can see it and be rescued out of these lives of death that we're so trapped in, rescued from the chaos and the hatred and the bitterness that plagues this world, and not just rescued out of it, but join him in driving it away. Join him in fighting back against all of that with his grace and his mercy and his love and his holiness. The things he wants to do in our lives. And to me, one of the best ways for you and I to encourage ourselves, because this is not easy, of course, but the best way to encourage ourselves is to remember what Jesus did, right? The most famous verse, you see it everywhere. For God so loved the world that he gave his only son, that whoever believes in him won't die, but will have life forever. What Jesus did is he got close to us so that he can make this difference in our lives. But what Jesus did that you and I can't do is he took all of our taintedness, all of our sin. He put it on his shoulders. He buried it, dying on that cross. And then he left it buried as he rose from the dead. That's what Jesus can do that you and I can't do. And so what he calls us to do is now take that and reflect it. But in just thinking about Jesus and celebrating it and singing songs about it, it reminds us, wow, what incredible love I've received. And when I'm filled with that love, now I can take it out and I can give it to others. And I'm not worried about getting close because I'm so full of his love. There's no room for other stuff to get in. There's no room for other garbage to get in. There's no room for that old life to creep back in on me because I'm just so full of the life he's given me. That's why singing and celebrating and worshiping is so important. So I invite you to stand with us. And we're going to sing this song about God's love. And I want you to let it fill you and then empower you to go and serve this mission Jesus called us to serve. Let's sing it together.